late. You're listening to CITR Radio, FM 102, Cable 102, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, and the Nardwuar to Human Serviette Radio Show. And you just heard the Pointed Sticks with Not Really You. Today on the Nardwuar to Human Serviette Radio Show, part two of my Pointed Sticks Dish Rags history. Before we get to playing part two of my Pointed Sticks Dish Rags history, I thought we would do an interview with ex-Pointed Sticks manager Stephen Macklem. So we're just trying to hook up with him right now, and while we try to hook up with him, some more Pointed Sticks for you on CITR, FM 102, Cable 102, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. The Pointed Sticks, possibly, but not necessarily, but probably in my view, the most important band ever to come out of V7V.
Yeah. be drinking.
We'll be drinking.
We'll be dancing.
We'll be dancing.
We could gamble all on just one chance. It better happen soon, 'cause I can't wait, no, I can't wait. But I don't have the money to do it, and when I get some, I'll use it. All the people that I meet when I walk down the street, they see I'm totally destitute.
Again, you're listening to CITR Radio, FM 102, Cable 102, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, and the Nardwuar Human Serviette Radio Show. And who do we have on the line right now? Are you there, caller?
I am here indeed.
Who are you? Could you please explain who you are?
This is Steve Macklem. I used to manage the Pointed Sticks.
Steve Macklem, the ex-manager of the Pointed Sticks. How does it feel all these years later to be interrupted in the middle of a Joni Mitchell conference call to talk about the Pointed Sticks? I'm sorry.
Well, I have to be honest, this is one of the most insignificant moments of my life.
Ba-boom! Steve, speaking of significant moments, what did you think about the reunion that happened a little while back? The reunion, I'm calling it, the Vancouver Complication Release Party. What did you think about that?
I thought it was great. I enjoyed myself. I haven't been out that late for years.
Had you bumped into anybody that you hadn't seen in a little while? Because you've been around Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada quite a bit. Was there anybody you bumped into? Were there any highlights of the night or anything that sticks out on your mind after you went home?
Well, I'd never met you before, Nardwuar, so that was definitely a life-altering moment.
Ba-boom, and meeting you was a life-altering moment for me, too, because the Pointed Sticks totally inspired me. And I want to ask you, Steve, because we're profiling the Pointed Sticks today here on the Nardwuar Human Serviette Radio Show. I profiled them last week with the Dish Rags, and this week, again, we're going to profile them with the Dish Rags. But before we get into the profile, I want to ask you, how did you get into punk? How did you get punked right off the bat?
I think I was one of the few people that had an apartment at the time, and so it was a good place for everybody to come and sleep or sleep off the effects of the evening. So a lot of people ended up crashing at my place, and I got to know people that way.
How about gigs you saw in England? I think you mentioned to me that you were over in England doing interviews and whatnot. What initially attracted you to punk rock? I was just wondering what got you into it. Like Jade Blade of the Dish Rags said she got into it through like the Ramones' first record that she got in like 1976. What got you into punk and how did you end up in England?
Well, I was over in England studying. Actually, I was going to school over there and sort of 1975, 76-ish, sort of that time, which is really when the sort of, the underground, it wasn't really called punk rock quite then. It was sort of, didn't really have a name, but it was sort of like, if anything, maybe they called it pub rock, because it was just basically rock bands, raw rock bands that were playing in clubs. They were a lot younger, and they were sort of experimenting with just garage rock again, I guess, and it hadn't really been, galvanized by the Clash or the Sex Pistols. The Ramones were bashing away and had some kind of thing going on in New York, sort of post-New York Dollsy kind of thing, but it didn't really have a name then. But we were going to the clubs, and that was what was playing, and I just loved it. By the time we got here in Vancouver, of course, the whole punk movement had really begun in earnest in England, and I was sort of going back and forth doing interviews because I'd met some of these bands as they were coming up, so I was doing interviews to try and make some money so I could pay my rent.
Where are those interviews published, and can we read them at all today, Steve Macklem?
That's a very good question. It'll give you a good idea how much money I actually did make. Georgia Strait actually did publish a little bit. Tom Harrison, I think, published a couple for me. Mostly I was bringing back the music and the interviews and trying to get Terry David Mulligan to play them on CBC Radio because I was supposed to be working for CBC Radio at the time. And that certainly was the excuse I used to talk the record companies in England into letting me have the interviews. So you might be able to find some of it if you go back into the CBC archives.
How about over in England? Were there any seminal gigs that you witnessed there? I'm just curious about like early gigs of the Damned or the Sex Pistols or the Clash. Did you see any really early gigs?
Yeah, I did. It all kind of melds into one now, so you have to forgive me. But we did see early Clash gigs, early Damned gigs. I saw another gig that was completely out of sequence with that, but Per Ubu played out at the Marquee, which was pretty spectacular. I saw so many gigs, it's difficult to pull them out. And at the time, it really felt like it was a club scene. It hadn't really exploded worldwide, so you weren't sitting down sort of making a list of the historical importance of the events as much as you were enjoying the fact that there was just great live entertainment again at last.
Steve Macklem, ex-manager of the Pointed Sticks, how did you get involved with the Pointed Sticks?
You know, I think I was the worst musician in the scene at the time. The Modernettes had very kindly offered to let me play bass for them. I think they were hoping, you know, that they could maybe use my contacts to get played at CBC or something like that. But they let me play bass, and I was so terrible. Somebody came up and said, you know, you should really be a manager. And I didn't know what that was, as I think my career amply demonstrates.
However, you did co-write a couple amazing songs, like, for instance, the marching song. That's an amazing tune. Don't disregard that accomplishment, Steve Macklin.
Well, there's nothing musical about it. I wrote the words. Same with The Real Thing. If I'd been left to contribute to the music, it probably would have been much less impactful.
So were those the two Pointed Stick songs that you wrote, and are those the two Sticks songs that are out there that people can hear?
Yes, they are.
Were there any other songs that you wrote that are out there that were done by any other bands, just out of curiosity, Steve Macklin?
No, there wasn't. I did do a lot of the cover work in the early days. I sort of worked a lot on the cover concepts and worked with Ian Tiles on some of the badges and some of the graphics. But no, not really. I just Nick invited me to write a couple of lyrics, and the first two he really enjoyed. The third time he brought me a song, and I had a line in it. I think I was talking about my girlfriend at the time, and I had a line in it that said there was a very big show on a spin-off of the Mary Tyler Moore Show that was called Rhoda, and I had a line in it that said she thinks love has something to do with Rhoda, and Nick sort of read it and looked at me and said, I don't like you anymore.
That's not a very nice thing to say to the manager.
No, I know, but it was true.
And you were Steve Macklin, ex-manager of the Pointed Sticks. Now I'd like to ask you
Absolutely
about...
Absolutely not. No, I was just Steve Macklin, ex-writer of the Pointed Sticks. The management they kept on.
Steve Macklin, movies that were shot in Vancouver, punk-related. The first one that pops to mind, Out of the Blue. What can you tell the people about Out of the Blue and your involvement with it?
Well, I remember that... that Dennis Hopper wouldn't share his cocaine. It was, and he had a lot of it, and he wouldn't share it. And what else do I remember? I thought that the backdrop for the artwork that Peter Schiff painted for the Pointed Sticks performance was great. I remember that there's a terrible shot of me sort of standing off to the side of the stage, sort of bopping my head and kind of trying to be like the roadie manager character, and I had to keep my back away from the camera because somebody backstage had ripped the back of my pants off and my ass was hanging out. That was mostly my memories.
I think this was an amazing...
I remember one other thing. I remember while we were doing this, and it was such a disaster because Dennis was so fucked up at the time, I remember, and this is the absolute truth, looking out a window while we were sort of trying to figure out what it was he wanted everybody to do, and another film was being shot, completely by coincidence, across the alleyway in another window, and it was a very serious detective film that starred James Coburn, and James Coburn was standing framed in this window delivering his lines, and I remember watching it and going, I wish I was in that film.
It is an amazing film, though, Out of the Blue. How did the Pointed Sticks get in it? Like, the Pointed Sticks are in this movie, for people that don't know, and you can actually go out there and rent it at Videomatica, or you can actually get it on DVD. How did the Pointed Sticks get in this movie? Because it's great period footage of the Pointed Sticks playing.
Well, the guy that ended up sort of casting a lot of the local sort of scenes for Dennis. Dennis needed a scene where he could find this girl that would pose nude. There's a kind of a nude scene in it that you'll see. And this guy volunteered his girlfriend, and so Dennis put him in charge of finding all of the other talent. And he was a friend of mine, so he asked if I had any bands. And I was managing the Pointed Sticks, so I brought them in. So it was very, very... infamous road to fame.
Steve Macklin, who else was in the movie? Because the Dish Rags have said that they're in the movie as well, except they're on stage when the Pointed Sticks music is actually playing. Is that true?
No, that's actually the Pointed Sticks. They were cross-gender. I don't know. I don't remember well enough, Nardwar. I'm sorry.
How about the other movie that was... actually, the movie Out of the Blue, Steve Macklin. We're speaking here to Steve Macklin, the ex-manager of the Pointed Sticks. Out of the Blue, where was that actually filmed? Where was that movie filmed? What hall was that at?
Oh, God, you got me there, too. It was in sort of Gastown, Hastings area, but oh, shit.
Would it still be there today, or would it have been gone by now?
I hope so. it didn't look like it was going to last when we were there.
Did the band get any feedback from the movie? Was the band broken up by the time the movie came out? Was there any kind of cool feedback by being in this Hollywood production?
Well, the movie disappeared so quickly, and remember, you know, Dennis at the time, I mean, Dennis has, you know, gone through many, many changes since then. You know, at that time, he was on a bit of a low, you know, because he had kind of, you know, it was a pre- Blue Velvet and all of the stuff that he went on to sort of create a character with. So really, all it was you know, people barely remembered Easy Rider, and he'd kind of disappeared into you know, L.A. Infamy, pornography, and cocaine, and whatever else Dennis got into at the time. So there wasn't a lot of fuss about the movie, and you know, it just kind of disappeared. It came out and disappeared very quickly. These days, you know, we're familiar with those movies that go straight to DVD. That one, I don't think, is lucky that it made it to VHS.
Steve Macklin, what about the other punk movie that was shot in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada? Ladies and Gentlemen, The Fabulous Stains. Did you have any involvement with that at all?
No, by that time, we, as in the local scene, felt that, you know, things were really falling apart. I think when Dennis got up here, the scene was just about... Well, you know, everything sort of goes through its moments, but I don't think it was starting to lose some of its energy a little bit, just a heartbeat later, and it really felt like, you know, this isn't real anymore. And I think that fell into that latter phase.
Steve Macklin, ex-manager at the Point of Sticks, did the Point of Sticks do any other movies or TV?
Did we do other movies or TV? Not to my recollection.
Other than the usual sort of like Soundproof or the Gina
yeah,
Show,
know,
that sort of stuff.
The interview stuff, but no, you know, no performances in anything notable, no.
Steve Macklin, ex-manager of the Pointed Sticks, how did the Pointed Sticks get signed? Was that all through a British tourist, Paul Conroy, that saw the band on holiday?
Well, yes, it was to a degree. What happened was that, you know, this goes back a little bit to the time I had spent in London and New York before we moved to Vancouver. And while I was in England, I had been hanging around with, hanging out would be a better way to put it, trying to get free records over at Stiff Records, and knew Paul a little bit there. So when he was on a talent hunt and looking for bands, you know, he had consulted with a few different people and had heard about the Pointed Sticks and gave me a call. And I said, "Oh, Paul, you must remember me. I'm the guy that..." He said, "Oh, yes, of course I remember you," which I'm sure he didn't. But anyways, I had a chance to speak with him, and he put in a bid. And then as soon as the word got out that the Pointed Sticks were being scouted by Stiff, Sire Records in New York called. That was a guy called Seymour Stein, who went on later on to you know, fame with Madonna, but at the time just had a small indie label, and he had signed you know, Talking Heads and did he have the Ramones at the time? Can't remember. Television probably. He had some bands, and he put in a bid, and we competed back and forth a little bit. But eventually we decided on Stiff because we wanted to go to London.
So did you fly Paul Conroy in? Did you fly him in?
No, Paul was actually in San Francisco at the time. The Pointed Sticks had made some impact in San Francisco, playing at the Mabuhay. Actually, all of the bands, most of the bands here in the beginning, if they weren't playing locally, they tended to head south because it was a little easier and a little more interesting. We generally jumped in a van and then headed to Seattle and Portland, San Francisco, Los Angeles, and San Diego. And we did the West Coast circuit rather than, and not that there was a circuit, but at least it had a beginning, a middle, and an end, rather than going to Calgary, which only had an end.
You had Sire interested, you had Stiff interested. Was there anybody else interested in the Pointed Sticks beside these labels? And was this all because of, quote, Fast Talkin' Mac?
It was Fast Talkin' Mac all the way. Do you remember a guy called Greg Shaw?
Yeah.
He died recently, but he used to have a label called Bomp Records.
Yes, and you guys contributed the song Apologies to Waves Volume 2.
That's correct. And there was also, what was Howie Klein's label? You'd know better than me, out of San Francisco at the time. Howie had a label, 415. I think it was called, after the area code or something like that. Anyways, Howie had a label, and Greg had a label, these smaller indie labels, and they were all interested in signing the band as well. as was the Quintessence label here locally, which had put out some of the earlier stuff.
How was the Sire offer, and why did you go with Stiff? Was it this because, you know, Stiff is England, Stiff is cool, and Sire maybe is new and up-and-coming? Why didn't you go with Sire, just out of curiosity?
Well, I felt that Dave Robinson at the time, who was running Stiff Records, was a little bit more likely to try anything. You know, he was really, he had the right attitude. Seymour was great, too. Seymour was a character, and he, as much as I enjoyed him, I didn't feel that he would contribute as much at the time. As most of my managerial decisions pan out, it was absolutely incorrect. Seymour probably would have been the better way to go in the end. And I eventually ended up doing business with him when I signed Katie Lang over there a few years later.
Was there any label interest for any of the other Vancouver bands, or were you the only manager getting label interest? Because I remember this story that I think I asked you about, Bev Davies told me about, this local photographer, about you talking to the managers from England, and the managers from England saying, bands like the Subhumans, what a stupid name, and they have songs called Fuck You, they'll never get signed. Like, were the Pointed Sticks the only band that was going out there and pursuing these options? Were the labels interested in any of these local bands? What was that story that I think I'm alluding to?
Well, I think that there was some interest. I mean, certainly there was interest in national Canadian labels eventually started to warm up to the idea. I think Polydor at the time in Canada, and a few of the Canadian labels, A&M comes to mind. Certainly the Paolas, when the Paolas surfaced, had great interest from A&M Records and A&M down in L.A. But I think at the time, and this is no discredit to Paul or Bob, but I don't think they were considered to be part of that seminal punk underground movement. The Paolas were maybe like one generation removed from that, even though the generations were probably only about 6 months long. So after the Pointed Sticks kind of imploded, some label interest did begin to evolve. Not much of it came to fruition, and most of it ended up being Canadian labels, which were about as useless then as they are now. But internationally, I don't think there was a huge interest in the punk movement because they felt that it was derivative of what had gone on before it in England and, I guess, to some degree in New York. And it was really...
But when you were talking to Sire or you were talking to Stiff, did you try to pitch any other bands like the Dishrags or the K-Tales or Young Canadians or anything like that? Were they interested, or was it just the Pointed Sticks they were focused on? Could they be persuaded to take another band? Like, MC5 and Stooges kind of came as a package.
Yeah, I always loved DOA. I still do to this day, and any time that... And the bands that really began this whole scene, I think, supported each other a lot. You know who you are if you're out there listening. I mean, there were probably five or six bands that were really the core of the scene at the time. Active Dog comes to mind, too, or the Modernettes. I think we all sort of tried to promote each other as much as there was infighting, and I certainly did. I pushed DOA because I loved them. I pushed the Modernettes and a number of other bands, but no, it just didn't really seem to, everything just seemed to happen and then unhappen so quickly.
Steve Macklin, ex-manager of the Pointed Sticks, and we're speaking here to Steve Macklin, the ex-manager of Pointed Sticks. I interviewed Jello Biafra of the Dead Kennedys a little while back, and I asked him this question. I said, what do you remember about the Pointed Sticks, Jello, playing with them? I mean, how would they go over, the Dead Kennedys and the Pointed Sticks playing together? It seems really odd. And Jello said, well, by today's standards, the Pointed Sticks would be considered a punk band, a pop punk band. Then he goes on to say, Steve Macklin, who I guess manages Katie Lang now, got on the ball like a good manager should and called up the Dead Kennedys. Oh, sure, come on down. All the other Canadian bands play with us. Why not you two? So we forged a friendship from there. Do you remember playing with the Dead Kennedys? Because I think that's amazing. Dead Kennedys and Pointed Sticks together.
Yeah, I do remember it very well, and I remember Jello very well. Like I say, this has a lot to do with the West Coast. This really was, for all of us, as much as it was a Vancouver scene, which it was also a West Coast scene, in that the San Francisco bands and the L.A. bands and the Seattle bands, really played together. They came up here, we went down there. And there most definitely was a scene, and the Dead Kennedys invited the Pointed Sticks into their world, although the Pointed Sticks had already made a bit of a name for themselves playing the Mabuhay Gardens and many other places, as had DOA and a number of other bands. But Jello was great because, the Pointed Sticks were good-looking guys.
And you are Steve Macklem, a good-looking guy himself, speaking to me, Nardwuar Human Serviette, live at a Nardwuar Human Serviette radio show, and winding up here, speaking about Stiff Records. So the band, the Pointed Sticks, signed to Stiff Records. What were the plans for the band once you signed to Stiff?
Were the plans? The plans were to make a record.
Because you put out a 7-inch first, right?
Yeah, we did. We had a lot of material. We knew that the band had what we thought was pretty good material, so we thought we would just go into the studio and record the good material. It had always worked that way in the past. We had, Brinsley Schwartz came over and did some recording with the band here as well, too. And everything that we had done in the studio with Bob Rock, all of the producers that we had worked with, even when we did the stuff with... When we were on the road, everything seemed to work well. When we got to England and we worked with Nigel, well, it was a funny thing, but I knew there was going to be a problem the moment that I came into the studio and saw Nigel, our prospective producer, doing lines on the console of the studio off of a nude picture of his wife and inviting the band to join in. I thought, I don't know if this guy's mind is on the music.
You just couldn't get away from the cocaine, could you, back then? You got...
as you might.
Yeah, Dennis Hopper doing it, Nigel Gray doing it. How did this Stiff 7-inch sell there, Steve Macklem? How did this Stiff 7-inch sell?
Well, let me see. I think that the only thing that got to the discount bins quicker might have been Lena Lovitch.
Really? It didn't do too well then?
Not too well.
How about live LP? Was there some plans for a live LP?
Yeah, I kind of wish that we had done a live LP. In some ways, it probably would have been more true to the time. But honestly, Nardwuar, I think that the problem really was that we made the wrong selection as far as a producer goes.
And they were getting a good deal on him, weren't they? Wasn't that the reason that they were using him?
No, not so much that. I think he had he had a little bit of a track record because he had just done the early Police tracks. And, he was youngish as producers went. You know, frankly, we should have probably stayed local and worked with Bob Rock.
I thought they got a good deal on him, like he was going to do it for really cheap, so Stiff really wanted you to work with them. Could have you worked with anybody else?
No, we probably could have, yes.
So you get to the studio, things aren't going so well. Could have you just walked right out of the studio?
In a way we did.
But when you walked out, you didn't really start over again for Stiff. Would they allow you to start over again, or did they say, you walked out, that's it, it's over?
No, Stiff, I think basically what they went was, that was it, that's it, next.
Because I was told by Bill Napier-Hemian, coming up right after this interview with the ex-manager of Pointed Sticks, Steve Macklem, an interview with Bill Napier-Hemian and Jade Blade and Grant Madonna from Zulu Records all about the Pointed Sticks. I was told that when the Pointed Sticks landed in England, there were posters everywhere, so it looked like things were going to go pretty cool.
Well, I'll tell you how that works, Nardwuar. Have fun. And it's done to this day. Bill posters are very, very good, particularly on when they're being instructed by the labels to poster the corridor of streets that the car that picks you up from the airport is going to travel on the way to your hotel, to create the illusion that the entire city has been bill posted, when in fact all that's been posted is the route that you've taken to your hotel room.
So it definitely fooled a couple Canadians then, eh?
I don't know, but it was...
How about the gigs in England? They went pretty well, didn't they? Like, you guys played...
The gigs were pretty good. Painting a negative picture sometimes, but I don't mean to. It generally went pretty good. What was really happening, though, was that I don't think that the band was prepared for the entire experience. I mean, England overall was pretty good, but the studio really started to pull it apart because the way that the relationship with the producer, they just said, I don't know if the bass player is keeping time with the kick drum, and I'm not sure if we should put a saxophone solo there where you guys always put that harmonica. And there were there were things that the producer was saying and looking for and trying to achieve that didn't have anything to do with the immediacy of the band and what they'd done in the past. And I think that had we been wise enough to just continue doing what we had always been doing, which is making, you know, good fast records at home, we would have been better served.
So what did they say after you left the studio? Did they say, you're dropped, you're not going to get another chance to re-record? What happened? Like, what happened? How did it end?
They said, well, look, why don't you send us some more material? And we did start to send them some more material, and I don't think that they felt inspired, because in England, by that time, the moment had passed. I mean, there was already almost time for ska, and it was like, well, we could always become a ska band.
Bill Napier-Hemmy was saying also that Stiff had a semi-comedy thing going on, and he didn't think that the pointed sticks were maybe fitting in with them, because the pointed sticks maybe were kind of sober.
Well, I think that he's right, that Stiff did have a bit of a comedy thing going on. I think it's more just typical of English sense of humor, and I think it still shows up to this day. And I think that the pointed sticks had a very good sense of humor, too. I just don't think that the two gelled.
How about when you got back to Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada? What happened then? How did you end up on Quintessence Record? How did you get out of the Stiff contract? And what made you go to Bob Rock?
Well, Stiff Records, you know, really didn't pick up their option. And you know, we decided, well, we're not going to sit around and wait for them. So let's just go make the record anyways. And, you know, Quintessence was happy to do it.
Was there anybody else interested? Like, could have you gone to Seymour Stein at that point?
And Seymour had kind of, again, was moving on as well, too. Madonna was looming.
So there was no other label to go but Quintessence, or do you think Quintessence would have just got it out the quickest? Is that why you went to them?
I think that's probably right. Yeah, I think the idea was, let's keep it local. Let's do it at home.
Now, you guys weren't happy with what was recorded. I've heard the tape since. I think it's amazing. What did Stiff think of what was recorded there?
They didn't like it.
They didn't like it either, eh?
No.
So the band didn't like it and the label didn't like it. Who didn't like it first, the band or the label? Like, were you surprised that the label didn't like it? Like, did everybody know it was a disaster?
Well, we were measuring it against the independent stuff that we had done here on our own prior to that, and we just liked the original stuff better.
I was curious, lastly, winding up here, Steve Macklin, ex-manager of the Pointed Sticks, any regrets at all for the Pointed Sticks? Anything you'd do differently now, looking back?
To be honest, no. I think it was a wonderful time. And I enjoyed it thoroughly. I don't think I'd do anything differently, except maybe get paid.
Because you guys got back to Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. You put out the 12-inch, the Perfect Youth LP. And then I guess you guys kind of broke up. You got a new lineup going, kind of a show band. You got rid of Tony Bardock. What was the kind of feeling for that direction in a band, where you kind of got rid of the bass player and you added an extra horn and you added a keyboard player as well? What was the feeling there? It was kind of like your last gig was like a private party or something like that?
That was. I think what happened was that, you know, and this is unfortunate, that's why I've never really, I've always sort of managed solo acts ever since, you know, because in a band, I don't know if the, you know, if democracy and art go hand in hand. Certainly it didn't with us. And you had different songwriters in the band. You know, you had Bill writing and Nick writing and Tony writing and Gord writing and Dimwit, for that matter, writing. Everybody had different ideas about where they thought the band would go, and I think the, you know, the disappointment of the recording experience in London, you know, began people to question, you know, what everybody else's role was, and how good is this person or how good is that person. And I think that really happens a lot in bands, you know, so the band was kind of growing up and going, you know, I think I want to do something different. And that's what they did.
Was there any sort of legacy, do you think, left by the Pointed Sticks? I think so, totally. But have you come across that at all in any people? Like, for instance, I think I asked you as well about, like, Elvis Costello. Does he know about the Pointed Sticks? Have you come across any of the old Stiff people in all your travels? What sort of Pointed Sticks run-ins have you had over the years?
Well, I come across them occasionally, from time to time. Certainly it's a name that people remember because they you know, they made a mark, you know, in the underground in London and, of course, in San Francisco and Los Angeles. So I think that, you know, the Pointed Sticks were legendary in the sense that I think probably DOA was as well, too. But they're certainly remembered as they have a good cult following. And, you know, bands turn up from time to time. My son, who was 17 years old, came and had no idea that I had done this kind of thing in the past before I became a dad, and came bursting into the room one day, you know, just about foaming at the mouth, because he said, you know, he thought that there was somebody else with my name, because he had sort of, I think, downloaded a version of the marching song, a live version of the marching song that had been recorded by Gob, a local band. And he said, you know, there's this guy that's got your name that wrote this song. And I said, well, no, actually, that was me. And that was a bit of an experience.
Well, thanks so much for your time, Steve Macklin. Really appreciate it. We're revisiting the Point of Sticks and also the Dish Rags. We're going to kick right into a conversation I had with Jade Blade, Bill Naperhemi, and Grant McDonough. What can you say about the Dish Rags as we cut into the Dish Rags? What can you say about the Dish Rags there?
I think the Dish Rags were, you know, at one time were probably the best of all the bands. I mean, it was the band that we all kind of focused around. The Point of Sticks were around them all the time, DOA. Everybody loved the Dish Rags. The fact that they were three beautiful 16-year-old girls had nothing to do with it.
Well, thanks so much for your time. Really appreciate it, Steve Macklin, ex-manager of the Point and Sticks. Anything else you'd like to say to the people out there at all?
Goodbye.
Well, thanks so much, Steve, and doot-doot-a-loot-doo.
Doodaloo.
Almost doot-doot-a-loot-doo.
I'll never get it.
Really?
Okay, doot-doot.
Okay, thank you. See ya.
Bye.
We now join part two of my Pointed Sticks Dish Rags profile in progress. Jade, I'm looking at your hair now. Your hair was different in a video I saw that was made for cable TV. Your hair was different, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
Your hair was bigger.
It was bigger. I never used to comb it, ever.
That was a nice video. That what video?
Past is Past?
Yeah, they played that on Much Music a few times.
Yeah, they do. I'm surprised, actually, that I see it so frequently.
Were any of your Dish Rag songs registered with SoCan, K-Pac, or any of that stuff?
You bet. Yeah,
so have you had any royalty checks come in to know that people were actually playing it, or the videos being paid?
Yeah, I get about, I don't know, 30 bucks each check, 60 bucks a year, maybe.
Probably no small part in due to the Last Call compilation.
I mean, I have to give it all back to Grant, of course.
And Bill, you were just noting here, I know we're speaking here about England, the Point of Sticks in England, but you were just looking through the press clippings, and what did you notice there? Something that kind of caught your eye on those press clippings?
This is excellent. This is the best part of the press clip. October 20th, 1978. Dear Student Council, the Pointed Sticks, winners of Vancouver's 1978 Battle of the Bands, are putting together concerts for under-19s, blah, 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 blah. We don't want to make money. We want exposure. We provide posters, sound equipment, and a 45-minute concert. We ask you to charge 25 cents at the door to cover our expenses, 10% of which goes to your student council. That's great, and a demonstration cassette is available on request. This is fabulous.
What do you remember about those high school gigs? Did you do many in Pointed Sticks?
We did about half a dozen. They were some of the best gigs we did, though. They were so perfect.
Were they lunch hour gigs? Did they follow that agreement?
They were lunch hour gigs. We stuck to the plan here. 25 cents at the door, and played lunch hour. Played Eric Hamber. We played Van Tech. A couple others.
Ideal School.
We played. Yeah. Or was it called Real School?
Ideal.
Okay. Yeah. No, they were great because in one of the gigs we were playing in a classroom. There was no stage. We were on the same. You know, we were just in a classroom on the floor playing, and the room was full of kids. That was Ideal School, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was it.
Yeah. Now, do you know someone that was there? Don't you?
Didn't Nancy Smith's son go there?
Nancy Smith was your manager.
She was our manager,
right?
Yeah.
What happened
anyway,
to her?
Well, she's back in town. She's around. You know, she's into desktop publishing, that sort of thing.
And did the Dish Rags play any high school gigs? What were you doing at this time?
We never played high school gigs. I don't know. We played the Windmill, the Commodore opening gigs. And
it seems kind of sad and pathetic. You're an amazing band, and you're just what went wrong there? You just had fun. It was just not a priority. You just were happy working at the Aroma Cafe.
No, we didn't start working there until after the band broke up. I just have a terrible memory, but I mean, we played a lot, but just just little gigs.
How did a lot of hall gigs.
They were great gigs. They were the best gigs.
They were always like $2 to get in.
And while we're getting into this kind of discussion, well, other things, not, well, we have to get back to England. You're speaking again to Bill Napier-Hemmy, Jay Blade, and Grant from Zulu Records, of course, Bill from the Point of Sticks, and Jade from the Dish Rags. Grant, you'd like to make some clarification about the Seattle scene. Kim was kind of bragging about it there for a bit. Well, she never bragged about it, but some of the bands from Seattle that are mentioned in this book that I mentioned, Kim's picture is in Loser. What do you remember about those bands, like Delude, The Enemy, all those bands?
I remember they were awful, but I think most, and I know it sounds kind of pompous in retrospect, I'm sure if I played some of those records, they were probably better than I remember, but like the Vancouver music scene around 78, 79 was very solid and perhaps a little too cliquey, but it still produced a lot of good music, whereas the Seattle scene, I don't know where it was picking up its influences from, but it was...
They said there was a good zine listed in that book.
Yeah, there were some great people in a city that provided a lot of bad music. There were wonderful people down there, but it wasn't until, you know...
Why did you have to go to Seattle to get your records out, basically? Why did that happen in Seattle?
Well, they really liked us in Seattle, probably because they didn't have any good bands of their own at that time, and I don't know. We just always had a really good reception there.
So nobody in Vancouver ever offered anything? Really?
Well, you were on the compilation album.
We were on the compilation album, but it just, I don't know, I mean, there wasn't much money going around for records.
There weren't labels, bands just did it themselves.
Yeah, I mean, we were recently trying to find one of our 24-track tapes from the second... EP, and we figured out that we actually rented it. So, you know, I mean, there wasn't money to even buy a tape to record on.
So you rented a tape and then they taped over it?
Yeah.
And now it's been taped over for something else over and over and over again.
That's right.
Bill, back to England. Speaking of taping and laying down tracks here. Now, you were in England to record with Nigel Gray.
Yes.
Nigel Gray, a producer guy.
Yes.
What's his background? Like
Police. He recorded the first couple of Police records.
You're stoked to go for this guy, aren't you? You are excited. This is going to be great. You're going to England. England! Was there much of a crusty punk scene there? Were the Mohawk things still happening or not really at that time?
Yeah, sure it was, yeah. When we played Electric Ballroom in Camden Town, you know, we were opening up for the Psychedelic Furs there, and I didn't really expect it to be quite so Mohawk-y, but, you know, it was just nothing but leather jackets and lots of Mohawks there.
Bands like The Exploited and Discharge and that were just starting. It was sort of like a second wave or third wave, whichever one, of a lot of the hardcore punk bands.
And also ska was happening at the same time, too. Madness were on the top of the charts at the time. So the whole punk thing was history at the time. But like Grant says, it was sort of coming back around again. But then these punks, they didn't go anywhere. They kept their leather jackets and their Mohawks, and they all lived in Camden Town, amongst other places.
Well, you chose Nigel Gray to record with. Did you have an offer?
He was chosen for us.
Did Nick Lowe once ask to produce you guys, but you said no?
Nope.
I heard you were in L.A. and you said no to Nick Lowe.
No. I think he said no to us.
Are you sure?
I'm not sure about anything.
Alex Vardy's quote, the point of Sticks, some of the Sticks had shown tendencies toward conceit. So I was reading this thinking like, oh, they were asked to be produced by Nick Lowe, and they said, no, we're going to get Nigel Gray.
No, Nigel Gray was selected by the record company.
So what was the Nick Lowe deal then?
The Nick Lowe deal was that he was sort of interested in the band. He showed up and saw us in L.A., and I don't know if he liked us or not. I think he showed up at some nightclub where we sort of stank the joint out, I think, as I recall. We didn't do one of our better gigs there. I'm not even sure. Nick Lowe, we would have been happy to have him produce. Absolutely.
However, you got Nigel Gray,
yes,
who snorted cocaine off the control board.
Nigel Gray was he was not a great guy to work with. You know, it wasn't a marriage made in heaven. But we made a record, and some of it sounded pretty good.
Dash Ham, your keyboardist, said you guys should have, like, walked out on him, but you were, like, spineless jellyfish. You just did not want to walk out on him. Do you think of that in retrospect? You should have said, screw this guy is doing coke. He's not worth us. We should have walked out.
Oh, that's blaming the producer too much. Never blame the producer. I mean, just make your music.
Well,
you know, I mean,
why was the stuff... Okay, basically what I'm getting to is your tapes were rejected, weren't they?
Yeah.
By Stiff Records.
Yeah.
Why were they rejected? Some people, some experts, pundits, have said that your tapes were rejected because, A, they were either too commercial, or B, madness was happening at the time, and, you know, Stiff wanted to go with the ska thing. What was the deal on that? Or, three, they were so ruined by Nigel Gray and his coke habit.
No, it wasn't really the right label for the band to begin with, really. I mean, because they had sort of a thing. You know, they had these semi-humorous bands. They were
when did you realize this?
Well, it was sort of apparent. I mean, I certainly.
Perhaps, but
I don't know. I mean, it was great to be on the label. It was great to be on a label.
They also signed at the same time this Australian band, The Sports. I mean, I think at the time Stiff had their eyes set on somewhat world domination and try to get the best bands from different territories. And so, you know, they had this whole new roster of talent, and they signed the Sticks and a few others. But then I think they kind of realized, we don't, you know, they don't have the resources or the manpower to do this properly. So with Madness doing so well, I think they just started staring.
So it wasn't that they didn't like the tapes, because the tapes sound amazing. That New Ways song, I love the song New Ways. How does that start out? It start up with like tape delay, or what? If the bass start,
just starts playing slowly.
Oh, it's great.
Yeah.
New Ways is, and the bass,
yeah, great.
The bass is really good.
It's really good.
The Bardock bass is really
it's
hot.
Really,
it's funny
good.
How Kim and the Fastbacks didn't really mention the bass elements at a point. Sticks, because the New Way, that bass was a great tune. New Ways is a great tune. He did not like, Nigel did not like keyboards, did he? He didn't like keyboards. He had thin guitars. That's again what you said.
Thin guitars, yeah, he liked those thin guitars.
But they didn't sound too thin, they sounded good. It sounded good.
Yeah, it depended on the song. Some of them sounded pretty good. But this business of Stiff, you know, they had this weird sort of semi-comedy thing that I don't think we quite fit into as well. you know. Like, I don't think Stiff counted on us being as sober as we were.
So the minute you finished recording, did you know it was over, or when did you kind of know it was over? Like, did you know when you, before you even recorded, like when you just were hanging out in London? Because you see, you arrive there and they meet you with minivan, you're driving to the recording place. This is crushing! I mean, Stiff, hotel rooms, pointed sticks, the Great White Hope, you know, dying. When did you realize this?
When they told us.
not until they told you, so you didn't know.
Yeah, I mean, we finished the thing, and they said, thanks, guys, but we're not going to release this.
Do you agree with this, Grant? Do you agree that Stiff, it was too commercial, just they didn't want it, they wanted nuttiness, they wanted the Nutty Boys madness?
They were, I went by Stiff at the time, I was in England, and I remember talking to a lot of the, you know, the main folks there at the time, and I was totally excited about the sticks being signed, but, you know, like I said, I don't think they knew what they got, and I think they checked out the band enough, and they wanted the band to fit Stiff's image, and as Bill said, Stiff had a kind of a wacky promotional image. I think the Point Sticks manager, Steve Macklem, and Stiff got along well enough. There wasn't a management problem, it was just they weren't the right label for the right band. I think if the, you know, in retrospect, if the band was with a more of a,
like Virgin or something,
more like a standard label like Virgin or else some American label like Sire or somebody, or Bomp at the time. Who
yeah, knows? Bomp we had were, you yeah. do the Apology song. That's a song that Fastfax covered, was Apologies. How did you get on the Bomp record? How did you get on Waves Volume 2 or whatever?
I have no idea.
Well, that's
Greg Shaw, Bomp record.
Greg Shaw, yeah, he
Bomp fanzine.
People like, you know, Kim Fowley and Greg Shaw and that, because they knew the L.A. pop scene pretty well. You know, they knew something was happening in Vancouver, and I don't know how he heard the Point Sticks, but
that's
I do
record.
Recall he, you know, he wanted to use a song for this compilation of all these up-and-coming American, whatever, new wave power pop bands. Actually, it was a terrible compilation. The Point Sticks track was I thought, the standout. And it's still, yeah, I still think that.
Yeah. And the German guy, remember I said that German fan, he said it's his favorite song, Apologies. He heard everything, Apologies was best, and he told you to come to England. You went to England. They said no to you in England, but you did record The Witch in England. Who told you about the Sonics? How did you find out about the Sonics?
Oh, I think Nick had been a fan for a long time.
Nick had
two
original albums. And
because when I first heard the Sonics, I went, are they playing a Pointed Stick song? I did not know.
Yeah.
Like, I heard the Sonics through you guys first. Thank you. Thank you for telling me. In 1980. Now, when Gord Bedanek, now I bring up the name Gord. I called you Gord before, but you really are Grant. Now, when Gord was doing this compilation, he told me he was not going to put on The Witch. He was not going to put on The Witch on your CD reissue. It made me mad because it showed in 1980 the Pointed Sticks were doing The Witch, but he didn't want to put it on there. But he did. I fought for it. Thank me for getting The Witch on there.
Yeah.
How come he
Thanks,
didn't? Well, how come he didn't? Well, what was the reasoning behind that, Grant?
Well, because, you know, we can only fit so many songs on, and we wanted to get some of the original Stiff songs. And to tell you the truth, Stiff songs.
Oh, sorry.
But anyways, the version of The Witch that we had, we just didn't think the quality was good enough. And it wasn't until we sort of put it on again in the studio, we went, hey, this is pretty good. Matter of fact, it was much better than we thought. And so therefore, like, another original Point Stick song didn't make that part of the Noise compilation because it just didn't, you know, it was sort of underproduced. It just wasn't there, and The Witch was far better.
Now I will say The Witch is too much over-covered, and maybe you shouldn't have put it on there because there's too many versions of it. But it's still kind of neat, though.
But it's the first cover.
It's great to have it there. Who designed your 7-inch, the 7-inch single, the one with the meat on it, the Stiff release? What's the deal on that one?
Well, Steve and John Sherlock, I think, sort of collaborated on that. He's a photographer, sort of product photographer in Vancouver. And I think they got together and did this photograph.
Wacky.
Yeah,
I don't know.
It's kind of weird. The band were not interested in our graphics, and we weren't interested in anything to do with our own image. So we didn't care about our haircuts or our clothes.
I think it was I remember talking to Steve.
Sometimes
our
clothes.
And he said it was like the idea was they're a pop band for a consumer. You know, for the consumers, and put them on a slab of meat because who knows what's going to happen. I guess it was kind of right in some ways.
Was there art for the LP that was scrubbed? Was there a cover that was going to be for the LP?
No, but actually, when you're talking about the cover art, we do have our first single was made by a famous artist. I mean, the guy who did the cover art for a first single is on the cover of Art in America a few years ago, which is pretty good. Peter Schoof. So there we go. There's some real cover art.
Well, was there an LP cover art for the Scrubbed Stiff LP? Was there art for that?
No. Never.
There was nothing planned.
No.
On the back, though, the 7-inch, the Stiff 7-inch, it goes, write for your own pointed stick. What was that?
Pencil, I think.
Yeah. I remember that's the budget of, I guess, Stiff's promotional budget. They had pencils, and somebody in England thought, hey, put the pointed sticks on. Clever, aren't they? So that's the extent of the pointed sticks. British
again, more
budget.
Kind of little nitpicking here with Bill Napierini, Jade Blade of the Dishrex, Bill of the Pointed Sticks, and Grant of Zulu Records. You didn't care about your image. Well, what about that neat drum kind of, you know, picture of those kids playing drums? Where's that from?
We found it in our practice space. And,
so it was just there.
It was just there. I was like, hey, this is cool. But
it was a picture? What was it, a picture from a magazine?
It was a drum. It was actually a decorative drum head from a toy kit that had we just found it lying around, and it was perfect. It tickled our fancy, so we kept it around as our little mascot.
How well did that 7-incher sell? How well did that Stiff 7-incher sell?
Oh, about 1,000 maybe more.
I think it did better than that, but... Yeah. I don't know. I never knew, but they never told you.
Was it only in?
Yeah.
Was
yeah.
it only
I made a couple of thousand of the 12-inch though at the time?
Oh no, the we were talking. Oh wait a second.
Oh, there was a Stiff 7-inch. Or the Stiff 12-inch.
Oh, the Stiff one. I'm sorry. Yeah. I have no idea about the sales figures for those.
I think they did 2,000. I seem to recall at the time, and of the 7-inch, I'm not sure, but I don't think it really sold that many beyond that.
Was it available in Canada at all? Was it only import, or like how much distribution did it get in North America, or was it only English? Like, what was the deal on it, or did it get any distribution anywhere?
It got hardly any distribution. I remember Quintessence imported a bunch for Vancouver and in the area. As far as in the States, I guess that the specialty record stores got it because it was on Stiff, and some of them were familiar with the point sticks, but no, it never really got around here much.
You don't see too many of the 12-inchers around, do you?
I didn't know there was a 12-inch.
Yeah.
With the same song repeated twice.
I'll show it to you.
No,
you never
right.
knew that.
No, no.
Well, you knew that, Bill.
Yeah, but I haven't.
We
I probably saw one once. Yeah, we don't own one. Yeah.
Jade of the Dishrags, when Bill came back from England.
Gift for you, then.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
When Bill came back from England, Jade of the Dishrags, you being so close together, what did he tell you about his experiences there? What did you gather? What did you learn?
That's a hard question to answer. Let me see. I got the impression that things did not go as well as they ought to have, which was the correct impression, as far as I know. That it was a, you know, that some things went well, but that overall it was a bit of a disappointment.
Hmm.
Did the Stiff fiasco signal the end of the band? Was that the end of the band?
No, not at all.
Did you know it was kind of over at that point? Because, you know, you have only one chance to make it, you know, and it's not going to happen again. You're not going to get another deal, possibly.
I don't know, but... Well, I mean, we went on and made an album after that, my full album, and toured quite a lot after that as well. So, I mean, we weren't out of steam at that point, no.
Because you got back and you re-recorded it, basically.
Yeah.
You left off New Ways. I don't know why you left off New Ways.
Well, that's a good question. Why did we? Great song. Why did we leave it off?
Grant?
I don't know.
Yeah.
There was only so much. It was on the test pressing, but it wasn't on the actual LP. What's the reason for that?
There were a couple other songs that Destitute was left off the Perfect Youth album, and then another re-recording of Somebody's Mom, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
How well did the LP sell? How well did the Perfect Youth LP sell? Grant?
It did okay, but by the time it came out, Quintessence was sort of going through some financial troubles as far as getting the record distributed. So I think a lot were sort of pressed up, but they never really left the warehouse, you might say.
Well, how many copies were pressed? How many copies
are
out there?
So. But I don't know how many. I think they're even more pressed, actually. But I think about, you know, 4,000 or 5,000 might have made it out there. But I don't think anybody really knows.
What were the hopes for the LP, Bill? What exactly were the hopes for the new Pointed Sticks LP on Quintessence? What were the hopes for that?
That people would buy it.
You're slowing down. Keep going. We're not finished the story yet. We have to wait for the band to break up before we can finish the story. You've just got back from England. Please, Bill.
Well, the fun bits.
Hey, you still got some. Hey, you still got an obligation to Grant to sell the new CD. You did no help. You didn't tour enough with the Quintessence one. You owe it to the Zulu guy to keep going. What were the hopes, Phil Napier Hemme, with the Quintessence Perfect at Youth LP?
World domination. We toured around with it, went across Canada. I think we went down to the States, maybe. I can't remember exactly.
We played a lot of gigs.
We played, a ton of gigs.
How many West Coast tours did you do?
I don't know, four maybe. Went back east once. Yeah, back east once, down, but mostly down the West Coast.
After the LP came out, wasn't there some hope that a big management company would like pick you up and eventually get distribution?
Oh, yeah.
Did that big tour come through? Talk about a big, 5-week tour or something around the States. Did any of that happen?
Well, not that I can remember, in particular, but you're always, wanting to do lots of gigs and that,
How about the dish rags? Where were they? What were they doing at that time? Were the dish rags still together when the Pointed Sticks got back from England, Jade?
Yeah, we were. I think it was the new band at that point was Sue and Kim. But we toured a bit. We played San Francisco. Well, with the old band, we played San Francisco, and then with the new band, we played the Calgarian for a week. We did an Alberta tour.
Well, I was there.
Nice.
Yeah, it was fun.
Well, all the gigs were good then. All the gigs, all the turnouts, all up and down the West Coast, they were good. Good reception for you. Like, did people know about you from the singles and stuff? Did it get distributed?
Well, when we played the Mabuhay Gardens, which was where all the bands seemed to play in San Francisco, we were, again, opening for someone, and I think most of the people who were there to see the real headliners. But I don't know. I mean, we got an okay reception. But it was never as good as Seattle or Vancouver. But in fact, Edmonton and Calgary were pretty good.
Did the Dish Rags ever make it in, like, Slash magazine? You know, that Slash fanzine, Grant,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, no, I remember Slash, but I don't remember being
in
it.
You didn't see that magazine up in Vancouver very much. You used to, you know, things didn't get around as often.
So was this signaling towards the end of the Dish Rags as well?
I guess so, yeah. I mean, we were only together for a couple of years. I think we'd broken up by 1980.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I don't
yeah.
know. My memory's so bad for this.
So, Bill, you got back. You're in Vancouver, B.C. You're doing some tourings. What's happening then? What exactly is going on? You canned Tony Bardock. You canned him, didn't you? You kicked the bass player out of the band responsible for the New Ways tune. I love the fuzz in New Ways. You know that, no.
You're trying to make me feel bad.
No, why did you kick Tony Bardock out of the band? Bill!
Oh, please. That's not, not a fair question, but
Tony Bardock's motives in leaving the band?
No, we kicked him out, I think. But we were really bad about personnel changes, and I think often a little unwise about personnel changes. I don't like them; they're unpleasant things. You know, we had some good lineups that we often didn't necessarily appreciate as much as we could have. We were always going after like a bigger, tougher, harder, louder, faster sound, and you know, we're trying to be as professional sounding as we could.
So you brought in additions. You brought in Scott Watson.
Yes.
I had the pleasure of speaking to somebody that actually went to one of the Pointed Sticks editions for being
really?
A bass player. Yes,
excellent.
Guy.
Who was it?
There was some guy from some band, Mauve. One of the Mauve guys actually was in there. One of the Mauve guys of edition. And he said he didn't get the gig. He said he was number two. He was the number. I guess you tell all guys that don't make it that are the number two guy. The number,
yeah.
You know, Scott was the number one guy. But he said there was a lot of tension at that time.
Yes.
You know, you were pretty worked up at that time.
Yeah.
It was a lot of tension.
We were a pretty uptight band sometimes. Most of the time.
Was that the end here? We're working here to the end, Bill. Was this the end?
Oh, this is really getting fun now. Thanks.
This is the show band era, isn't it? This is the show band
era.
Yeah,
the saxophone and lots of keyboards. And yeah.
How did people react to that, the show band era? How did people react to the show band? You know, going to Toronto, your first time to Toronto, and you're playing big gigs in Toronto. Did people mind at that time, or didn't matter? I mean,
in Toronto, they didn't mind. I mean, they didn't have nothing to compare it to.
In Vancouver,
We did the show band played around a few. We played a fair bit in Vancouver. I don't know.
And your bass player, Tony Bardock, he had his wedding filmed by Paul Wong, and it was shown on Cable 4. Why did that happen?
Good question. I didn't... Yeah, really.
Paul Wong,
wow.
That controversial video guy, videotaped Tony Bardock's wedding and showed it on Shaw Cable 4, forever entrenching our memory as Tony Bardock as being a wedding guy and not a Pointed Stickser. But the Pointed Sticks did make it into Dennis Hopper's Out of the Blue, that movie, Out of the Blue. What do you remember about that? You did Somebody's Mom, again. You loved that tune. You did like five versions of that tune, didn't you? You love recording Somebody's Mom, right?
Yeah.
That's a great tune, too. Any comments?
On the movie?
Yeah.
I can comment.
Yeah, yeah, you comment. You comment.
Sorry, Jade, I forgot about you for a second.
I've been
working so hard to get Bill here to open up. I mentioned the Tony thing, and now I forgot about you. Hey, how you guys doing? Grant, you still there? Grant from
we're
Zulu?
Still here.
Grant,
we're still
Jade.
Here.
Yeah, Jade, please explain. This is Dennis Hopper's movie, Out of the Blue.
Out of the Blue. The final version of it featured Bill actually playing bass for the Dish Rags, and in the final version, I understand, is a Point and Stick song being aired while the Dish Rags, with Bill with paper bag over his head, is playing bass.
Wait a second. I rented a movie recently. It's out there, Out of the Blue, by Dennis Hopper, and it shows a kid, the main character, playing the drums on somebody's mom. I didn't see where the Dish Rags were in on that. There was no Dish Rags in the version I saw.
Well, we were there in the background somewhere. We were on a poster on her wall.
Yes, you were. You walk in the room and see the Dish Rags poster. That's not to be confused with the other movie, Ladies and Gentlemen of Fabulous Stains. What's the deal on that, Grant? You must know about that one.
That was a funny movie because C-Fun Radio on 4th Avenue made this announcement that a major British rock band was going to be playing the Gardens and tickets were going to be given away for free. And at the time, everybody thought it was Led Zeppelin or The Who. And I remember going to down 4th Avenue and there was like about, it was literally four blocks lined up there of all these people from wherever inside town, East Van, the suburbs. And I heard that it was for this bogus movie that was being made of members, like a member of the Pistols, a member of the Clash, but it was just some, you know, member of the Tubes, some awful movie that was being shot here. And so all these people were lined up to see a punk gig, a quote-unquote punk gig, which was punk with a small p. And it was just... I was just howling. I went to the Gardens just to look at the travesty of it all, and man, you know, what can you say? It's a terrible movie.
Were any local bands in it?
And all these people were just there with their jaws dropped, like, I thought it was supposed to be The Who. Instead, there's like, one of these guys was in the Pistols. It was just like, it was hilarious.
So, Bill or Jade, you don't remember that at all? You weren't involved in
it?
Oh,
I was in it.
You were in Ladies and Gentlemen of Fabulous Stains.
Yes, I was one of the skunks. I mean, I was a skunk fan. I had my hair dyed specially for it and got paid to show up every day, which was great.
Was that your... Any other movies that you were in at all, Jade?
No.
Bill, any other movies of Point of Six that aren't your TV?
But, Jade, you're in the Eyes of the Stranger... Eyes of a Stranger video.
You're not the Eyes of the Stranger, are you?
That's really embarrassing.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh.
No, Jade, please. Please, tell us.
Yes, I was in the Eyes of a Stranger video.
You are the Eyes of a Stranger?
I guess in video form, yes.
Doesn't also the Paolas have the distinction of having that video used in that movie Valley Girl, where there's kind of like an intimate scene happening at that point? But you were in the actual video. We can see you.
Yes, the video, not the film.
Did you get noticed at all on that?
Well, yeah, a few people saw it. A few people saw it and said, hey, I saw you in that video. But, you know, it wasn't my big break.
So no other TV or something for the Point of Six? Like,
oh,
the
yeah.
Gina Show? Didn't you do the Gina Show?
Oh, we did all sorts of TV.
What do you remember those gigs?
Vancouver Show and that Gina Show, I reckon. They were fun. TV's great. TV's, like, my favorite way to do music.
Well, was Dennis Hopper drunk on an Out of the Blue movie? Because I've watched
film
that.
Film now. We're back to film. Was he drunk?
Yeah, this is...
He might have been.
It's a really wild, crazy movie. And there's lots of girls wearing, like, cheetah patterns everywhere. And an elite girl plays drums on one of them. And it's
Linda Mounce.
And then there's, like, there's the kind of backstage stuff. What do you remember of, like, the shooting of that film? How were you approached? Was this kind of... This must be kind of neat, like Dennis Hopper and including the Pointed Sticks in it.
Well, it was really... you know what they say about movie making, you spend all your time waiting around, right? But it was like that, but the place was packed. It was just full of people waiting around. So we were there till like about 4 in the morning or something, like with a couple of hundred other people just waiting around, it was, you know, while they shot a scene in the bathroom, you know. We got to play, and he seemed to be out of control, didn't know what he was doing, but, you know, the film ended up coming off like, it looked like a real film. It wasn't a great film, but it looked like a real film, which is amazing, because he didn't really seem to have his act together at the time, but I guess he somehow pulled it together.
It's great to seeing the lead characters go like, I want to go see now the Pointed Sticks, and then that girl gets in the cab and goes, take me to that DOA gig or whatever, and she walks in the room, yes, and there is a Dish Rags poster, but I still didn't see the Dish Rags in the movie at all, Jade.
Well, you know, when the Pointed Sticks song is playing, and they show the Pointed Sticks in the background on stage, that's really the Dish Rags. It is.
But I do appear in it as myself, don't I, with my blue sweater.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and there's a point where we're playing, and I'm wearing the blue sweater my grandmother knit me.
The name of the movie, Out of the Blue, featuring appointed sticks and dish rags, available probably at Videomatic or your local video store, by Dennis Hopper, Out of the Blue. Winding up here, speaking to Bill Napierhemmy of the Pointed Sticks, Jay Blade of the Dish Rags, and Grant of Zulu Records here, promoting, I guess, kind of, the new Pointed Sticks release, Part of the Noise. I mean, it's exciting. It's finally getting out there. It's out there now. It's out there. It's out there. People know. I'm happy. The definitive Pointed Sticks, new ways, great bass, good sound. What sort of keyboard did he play? What sort of did he play? You know, what sort of keyboard did
Gord.
He play?
Gord.
Yes.
He. Gord Nickel.
Yeah, that he played.
He played. I remember him going to the Yamaha showroom in South Vancouver, and he bought a Yamaha something or other, like YCM330. It had all these big colored plastic buttons all over it, and it weighed about 1,000 pounds. And so for the techno nerds out there, that's what he, something like that, one of these old Yamahas, organ.
Was it, it was not a Farfisa then?
No, it wasn't a Farfisa, a Yamaha.
He didn't play any Farfisa ever.
He may have. He may have tried to get the Farfisa sound with his Yamaha, but anyway, that's what it was. It was a Yamaha.
What was the song Found Another Boy about, Bill?
Let's see. I wrote that, didn't I?
Yes.
I think, yeah. I don't know. It's just, you know, like some teen broken heart song, I think.
What happened to Bev Davies? Oh, yes, you're about to say, sorry, am I interrupting you? Yes, you have something else to say about Found Another Boy, the song Found Another Boy?
No, I'm just trying to remember how it went, but, have you heard it or something?
Oh, just heard it. It's an important unreleased Pointed Sticks song.
Oh, Grant knows about, would know about this.
Grant?
It's a good song, I like it, yeah.
There's some mystery behind the song Found Another Boy, Grant?
No. No, as far as I know, it's just
not found another boy to play bass. Being
oh right, found another
it's
bass
just
player.
An early song of yours, right?
Found another bass player.
Very long.
Yeah, we had a lot of. I mean, we went through tons of songs.
In the band, had so many songs.
We did, yeah.
And hopefully, we'll be able to hear some splish splashing too. The Token Ringo song, wasn't it? Why wasn't that released? Why wasn't that on the CD? Come on, Dimwit singing splish splash.
It almost was because we recorded it for
Stiff.
Yeah.
It's interesting to note that those Stiff songs that you recorded, you didn't even have the masters. You just took it from a cassette. It sounds really great, just from the cassette.
Mm. Yeah.
Is it true the Pointed Sticks played the last couple of gigs at the Cave?
That very last gig was a private party for some business that was having a staff party. Do you remember that one, Grant?
Yeah, I do.
That's a sad way to go.
Well, they paid you, at least.
Yeah, they paid. The place was full.
No.
People
do you
danced.
Do you mean, like, the Pointed Sticks closed down the Cave? Or do you mean, like, when the Sticks last gig?
Yeah, well, when the Sticks played... Yeah, did they close down the Cave, or weren't the Sticks...
They were near the very end of the Cave you guys played, I think.
So what happened? Bring us to the end of the band and the end of the interview here, Bill Napierhemmy. And we're getting every little detail here. There's probably stuff we've missed that you guys haven't talked about or I haven't asked. And there's more information, of course, you could probably get any phone Grant at Zulu Records. But bring us to the end of the band, please, Bill. Please bring us. Recreate those last days in those bunkers for us.
that's a good one. I don't know. Let's see. Well, we did our last gig, but I don't even recall. I just I don't really remember there being a moment when it was like, oh, this is it, this is all over. But it just, you know, it just sort of all of a sudden you realized, yeah, this, we're not going to play anymore. Do you remember, Jade? It was obvious. I mean, it was a gradual process that, you know, it was sort of this inexorable dissolution of the people. We were all sick of each other.
It wasn't like an announcement. It just, yeah. There's no more gigs booked, I think, you know?
Yeah,
I remember
talking
to Steve right at the very end there.
And then you went, like, corsaging and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Now build ancient instruments, right?
Well, actually, what was happening around the time the band dissolved was all this fuck band stuff was happening, and Bud Luxford Presents, and there was all this other stuff that people were having fun with. And we weren't having fun with our band. And
even though you started having fun,
The whole point of the band was to have fun. And then all of a sudden there were all these other things that were fun. And so it wasn't as if the band said, oh, now we're breaking up. It was just that there were other things happening, and people were involved in different things.
Oh, yeah, Frank Frinken Five are really important to, get those
Buddy,
tunes down.
Buddy Selfish was happening. Nick was getting involved in that. And there were all these, the Bud Luxford Presents records. Jade and I were in the Young Canadians. Jade and I were in the Young Canadians for a time. That's a little piece of trivia that I don't think you got yet.
Really?
Yeah, we had a band with, it was the Three Dish Rags plus Phil Smith and myself, and we were called the Young Canadians. And when the K-Tells had a problem with their name, we gave them our name.
Is that why in one of their songs, you young Canadians, like that's not a reference to your first band?
Unrelated.
Because there was lots of other bands called Young Canadians, too. There's some singers and stuff. Didn't you get your name from, like, some 60s, like, singing troupe called the Young Canadians?
No.
And also, speaking about Jade for a second, you guys kind of met in Victoria. Now, on one point in Styx's trip to Victoria, didn't Gord Nickel get arrested for shoplifting?
Did he?
I don't remember that.
He could have.
Grant?
I don't know.
I wasn't there.
Sorry.
The band wasn't dirty in that respect? Was Gordon got in trouble with the law or anything like that?
No, nobody got in trouble with the law.
So, Jade, what happened after you quit the Aroma Cafe? What happened after the end of the Aroma Cafe?
I went back to school. I mean, the Aroma Cafe, well, it wasn't the Aroma Cafe either. It was just Aroma. And in fact, we recorded a jingle for Aroma, which was really very good. That was the Young Canadians who did that. But, I mean, I've been in school ever since then.
Are you still going?
Sad story.
You're still going to school?
Sort of.
You're taking entertainment law to help negotiate further appointed Styx releases with Stiff?
No, it's not my ambition to be involved in music at all.
And Bill, what happened to you after the end of the Point Styx? What bands did you join? You did Corsage.
Yep.
And what is this ancient instrument thing you're?
Yeah, into? I got into instrument making, designing instruments. And Jade and I both went to London together, and when we were there, I studied instrument making. And now I've come full circle, and I'm making rock music in a classroom again, just like the Pointed Styx did in our early days.
Do people remember you as a Pointed Styx? Do the kids know that you're a Pointed Styx?
Oh, yeah. Some of the students have got the CD. The kids' parents know the band. And some of the kids have got the CD already. And now what some of the grade 10s want to do a cover of the real thing, which I think is kind of neat, to have the real thing performed in a classroom once again,
but does it
15
make
years later.
Because some of the kids, I don't know if this is the right comparison, because Grant hates this band, The Villains. You hate The Villains, didn't you?
Yes.
Why?
The truth can come out.
Why? The Villains were a great ska band. I loved them, because they were fun to dance. Why did you hate them? Because they faked their English. Why?
They were just like the worst Vancouver band I'd ever seen.
Well,
point.
The Villains were a ska band.
They were British, a bunch of guys who came over here when ska was dying in England, and they started up in Vancouver, and there are a lot of gullible people here.
I loved it. It was great. It was great.
Well, it's different because, you know, I mean,
it was great. But what I'm trying to say about
sorry,
the Villains is
no.
When I found out that the sax player was like one of our teachers, it like this crushed us. Like the sax player for the Villains is one of our teachers. It didn't make the band so cool anymore. So when kids have found out they are in the Pointed Styx, has it crushed them or has it an opposite effect?
They like it.
Grant, please elaborate on the importance of Jade Blade. I've kind of like written her off, kind of forgetting she's there. Hello, Jade, are you there?
Hello,
Jade,
I'm
Jade
here,
of Dishrags,
here.
Tell a bit about Jade. Tell, you know, you bought the Ramones record, you know, kind of, what year was it you bought the Ramones record in Seattle?
76?
In 76, and I've kind of like used that as a joke, but what's the real significance of this? Grant, please.
Jade was the first punk on stage in Vancouver, because the Dishrags, right? You opened up for the Furies at the very first punk gig in Vancouver.
The very first punk gig in Vancouver. The first band to play was the Dishrags, who opened up, and you were the first punk on stage in Vancouver. In fact, the Dishrags were the first punk band to play then.
Yes.
The Dishrags, the first, and the first probably all-girl punk band wearing... Did you wear leather jackets? I like asking this over and over again.
Did.
You did wear leather jackets in Vancouver. That was an amazing achievement, isn't it? Bill, Grant, please comment on that.
It is. It's pretty...
That is mind-boggling. Like, for a second, listeners.
Yeah.
Listeners, for a second. Turn up the radio. Listen for a second here. Jade Blade of the Dishrags was the first punk on stage in the first punk band playing the first punk gig in Vancouver. In Vancouver. What do you remember about the gig, though? Anything special at the gig?
Oh, it was terrifying. We were only 15, too, so we were really pretty young doing this. But it was... there were hardly any people there, and the reception was extremely cool. I remember we got a terrible, terrible review by Tom Harrison in the Georgia Strait. But it was fun.
That's amazing he reviewed it, though. That's great he reviewed, like, the first punk gig. So it must have been kind of a buzz for that happening. What was going on there?
Well, there was a lot of advertising going on ahead of time. Our manager at that time, Kat Hammond, managed both us and the Furies, and she went mad with the posters, and so it was very well promoted. But not that well attended in terms of actual paying people. But it, you know, it got a fair bit of attention.
Who was there? Bill, were you there? Bill Napier-Hemme?
I remember that night because I wanted to go to this concert. I thought,
yeah,
great,
sure.
there's going to be this punk concert. And I was in another band called Primal Scream. And we had a gig that night on a boat. It was like a party, some friend's party. And so I missed it. And I would rather have been at the Dishrags concert.
Grant, where were you?
I was probably at home listening to a record because I remember my sister wanted to go to the gig, and I just went, oh, this is local stuff. Forget it. Local bands suck. If it's a band like The Damned or The Pistols, but the Dishrags? So.
What year was this?
I didn't go to a local gig, and there weren't many back then until, you know, early
1977! 1977! When was the punk stuff happening in England?
It was right
then. That was when the Pistols were going.
God Save the Queen came out. That was right around the time.
This is like pre-God Save the Queen. You're there, Jade.
Congratulations!
Thank you. Who was there besides you?
Well, I'm trying to remember that. I don't know that I knew anyone other than my parents showed up, and
So there you go! Thank you, you were not cool enough. Jade Blade and her parents were at the first punk gig, and you were playing at it. Thank you so much, Jade. You're the best. Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks, Nardwar.
Prison, cut the code. They think they have the code.
Jade Blade of the Dish Rags, Bill Napier Hemi, Grant of Zulu Records would like to leave the listeners out there in Radioland with anything we haven't covered in, like, some dish ragging stories or some pointed shtick stories or some Zulus, anything else, any other little tidbits you think that haven't been covered, please, a closing comment, Jade Blade, please, with the Dish Rags. And remember, the Dish Rags had that 7-inch on Modern Records from Seattle, who you don't really know who ran Modern Records, but you were just happy for them to put it out. And then you had that RCA release. You fooled them. That is such a good gag, Jade Blade. Thank you for putting RCA and Made in England, even though it wasn't made, like, pretending it's on a major label. That was great. And then the band broke. Hey, closing comment, please.
Well, can I promote our new band? Or is that cheating?
No, that's fine.
Bill and I and Rodney Graham, who used to be in U-Jerk, and Shannon Oxenden, are in a band, and we don't have a name yet. So if anyone out there has any really great name suggestions in Radioland, we would like to hear them.
You had a great name, though, Jade.
Well, for now, we're called the Women of Rock, but we'll see what happens.
That's a good name.
Bill Napier Hemi, please give me a closing comment, you Tim Ray or AV-er. I didn't realize you were in Tim Ray and AV. I'm sorry. I got it mixed up with Tin Twist, a band. Tin Twist. I don't know why I got it mixed up with that, but Tim Ray, AV, closing comment. Pointed Sticks, please. Closing comment, please. Well, actually, screw you for a second. You're the man of the hour, basically, the Pointed Sticks thing. The Dish Rag stuff hasn't come out yet. Grant, closing comment. Closing comment here, please. Grant, Zulu
well,
Records.
I just hope you can... I hope people like the songs if they never heard them before.
And we're not saying that those were the days.
No, we're not.
They were great music. There's much good stuff now, you know, but still there's good...
There's more good stuff.
Yeah, but it was good, though, and it's out there, and Kim and the Fastbacks likes it, so that's okay. And Bill, closing comment, anything else you'd like to add, the listeners out there in Radioland, with your Point of the Sticks days, anybody you'd like to make up to, Alex Vardy, any of those people, those old times. Stiff Records, your old reps, Nancy Smith, please, give it to us.
I'm sorry, Tony. Sorry.
Okay. Oh,
there we go. Okay, good night. Thanks, Nardwar, for having us in.
Sure.
It's been a pleasure.
Well, Bill, finally, does it only happen when you're young?
What? No! Absolutely not. It happens whenever you feel like it.
All right, well, keep on rocking the free world and...
That was our last song. Thanks very much. See ya. Okay, let's hear it one more time for Pointed Sticks. Apparently, Julio of the Single Bullet Helios, your buddies want you in front. Okay, come on, let's hear it for Pointed Sticks and bring him back for a fast encore. And then it's time for the Plastics.